Explicit content is found in this episode, so listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. We are picking up right where we left off in part one. If you have not listened to part one of this episode, I would recommend starting there first. Part one ended with Eddie Lee Sexton and his children leaving the state of Ohio after a DHS investigation threatened Eddie Lee's control over his family, but most importantly, the dark secrets they held. The secrets would only get darker. Okay, on to the show. After fleeing the state of Ohio, Eddie Lee Sexton's namesake, Eddie Lee Jr., was interviewed by the local news station, the same one that weeks prior had covered the barricade story. When asked about why there were rumors of sexual abuse and misdeeds by the senior Sexton, all Eddie Lee Jr. said was, "There's nothing wrong with our family. They gotta be making it up, because I've never seen anything out of the way when I lived in the house." The viewers at home had no way of knowing that his father controlled him, even without being physically present. Loyalty to the family and its secrets were non-negotiable. However, the secrets would start to pour out, and some residents would begin to share their sordid tales of the Sexton family. On one occasion, after Eddie Lee made bail from the charges surrounding the standoff, the family moved in with a woman by the name of Augusta Townsend. She shared what she witnessed with Lowell Caulfield. The boys were sleeping in my living room. Christopher and Skipper were on the rollout bed. Kimberly was in her usual spot with her parents in their bed. That night, I come downstairs to use the bathroom, and I saw them. The mother was on her knees on the side of the bed, sucking Christopher's dick. Her head was between his ass and going up and down, and Skipper was watching. Everybody acted like they was deep in love with that man, all the way down to the youngest. I seen his little girl Kimberly just crawl, climb, and squirm like some sex maniac on top of her daddy. It's just like you train a dog. It was to no one's surprise that after Mrs. Townsend witnessed what occurred in her living room, that Eddie Lee decided they needed to leave. And not just her home, the state of Ohio entirely. But before he left, he gave Augusta one last parting gift, a single bullet left on her kitchen counter. She took that as a sign that Eddie Lee would kill her if she ever told anyone what she saw. Eddie Lee and Estella May, along with their two eldest sons, Charles, or Skipper as he was known, and Willie, a mentally challenged boy who hung on to his father's every word, made two short stops, first in Oklahoma and then Indiana. Once they were in Indiana, Pixie, her husband Joel, daughters Shasta, Dawn, and newborn son Skipper Lee, named after his uncle Charles, joined the rest of the family as they made their way to Florida. During their travel, the state of Ohio remanded custody of the five juvenile children of Eddie Lee and Estella May Sexton to DHS. They also charged them with abuse and neglect of a dependent, four counts of sexual imposition and rape, and two counts of sexual battery and child endangering. Despite the looming threat of prison, Eddie still made his regular monthly trips back to Ohio to collect his disability and workers' compensation payouts. Nothing would stop Eddie Lee from collecting what was his. He had little tolerance for Joel Good. He only encouraged Pixie to marry him so that DHS would cease their investigation into claims that he had fathered both of her daughters. Joel was unaware of this and was deeply in love with Pixie. This love was not reciprocated. He would attempt to hold her hand, kiss her, hug her, and even have sexual relations with her. All of his advances were rebuffed. Pixie knew she could only truly be interested in one man, her father. Upon arriving in Florida, Eddie Lee demanded that his daughter, Sherry Sexton, and her young son, Christopher, who were living with a cousin at the time, return with him to the trailer home he had bought for his family. She had no choice but to go with her father. Eddie Lee shared with her that they were preparing for war. To ensure his children were prepared for this war, he began training them to use various firearms and a garrote. If you are unfamiliar with this particular device, it is usually a cord or wire with handles attached at the ends, used for strangling a victim. In this twisted scenario, it would be the DHS worker who was coming to return the children to state foster care. The family would purchase a mobile home in Hudson, Florida, which is north of Tampa Bay. They would attempt to remain as inconspicuous as possible, but this would not last for long. A neighbor boy got into an argument with Skipper and Willie. They were prepared to fight, but Eddie Lee was afraid that this would draw attention to his family if the police were called, so he ordered his family to pack up immediately, and they were on the move again, but not before leaving a Sexton trademark. He ordered the boys to set fire to the mobile home so that he could collect the insurance.
I'm going to pause the case right here so you can hear a word from our sponsor.
They rolled into Hillsboro River State Park in the Dodge Challenger on October 5, 1993. The campsite was limited to 8 people. 14 people had now managed to cram themselves inside of that camper. During the day, no one, especially the children, were allowed to leave the camper without permission. Eddie Lee would take his children deep into the woods and drill them on pseudo-army maneuvers, but they were not as sharp as they once were. Their fatigues were fading, and their strength and stamina was weakening. The family was worn from their time on the road. Eddie Lee believed that there were warrants out for his arrest, and that the FBI was after him and his family. Little did he know, despite the charges, there were no active warrants for his arrest. Old Skipper Lee Good endured months of abuse by his mother, Pixie. When the child would cry for either being soiled or hungry, Pixie would slap him with both sides of her hand. This would immediately shock him into silence. The only small amount of love he was shown was by his father, Joel, who was not strong enough to stand up to the Sextons because he too endured multiple beatings from the Sexton men. 2 weeks into their stay, on October 18, 1993, Skipper Lee fell ill. There are different accounts of how the next events took place, but they would all agree that to some degree, Skipper Lee was sick. What is disputed is the nature of his illness. During the 2 weeks, he was unable to hold down any food, switching from listless to fussing, and at times he would be observed in a cold sweat. His mother would pour a capful of adult strength NyQuil down his throat every day. Later, this would be revealed to have been the reason for his symptoms. The baby was initially only teething. The medicine is what worsened his symptoms. Pixie's account is that she wanted to take Skipper Lee to the hospital. This is strongly disputed based on her siblings' testimony of how she treated her young son. Eddie Lee refused to allow her to seek medical attention for her son because he was afraid that the authorities would find them and everything would be all over, all because of a sick baby. Pixie and Willie would testify that later that evening, the baby awoke crying after sleeping the past 17 hours. Pixie, despite her efforts, tried to quiet the child, but he would not stay silent. Willie witnessed Pixie give Skipper Lee another capful of NyQuil, but his crying continued. According to Pixie, Eddie Lee would scream from the front of the camper, "Get that baby quiet or I will come back there and do it." Pixie, Willie stated, then slapped the baby about 10 times with both sides of her hand. This did not quiet the baby, and this time, Pixie had a final solution in mind. She placed her hand over the child's mouth and nose until he was silent. Relieved, she took the baby and slipped back into bed. The next morning, Skipper Lee Good would still be deceased. When Pixie yelled for her father, she simply stated, "It just died." The baby was gray and lying on the bed with his eyes open and silent. Eddie Lee stated it was crib death, but his Uncle Skipper would attempt to resuscitate the baby. He stopped when it was clear that the child was dead. Joel Good was not mentioned as being a part of this sad scene. Another day passed, and Eddie Lee determined that the baby needed to be buried. Pixie readied her child for burial. She removed the night clothes he was still in, changed him into some overalls, placed a pacifier into his mouth, and a rattle in his right hand. She then slept with her deceased baby one last time. The next morning, she would place the baby in a duffel bag, and 50 yards from their campsite, he was buried. Accounts vary on the presence of Joel at the baby's burial. Some will say that Joel dug the hole and was crying profusely. He sobbed, "Why me? Why does it have to be my son?" What is known is that Joel began lamenting after the burial that he wanted to take the child back to Ohio and have a proper burial for him, that the way his son was buried wasn't right. Eddie Lee pulled Pixie aside and warned her, "If he keeps this up, we're going to have to take him out." Pixie was growing increasingly annoyed with her husband. She was not concerned about whatever fate would befall Joel. Like Eddie Lee said, "A good snitch is a dead snitch." During a very random trip to a library, librarian Gail Novak was approached by Pixie and Joel, inquiring about books on crib death. Gail observed that Joel had been slurring and stumbling around, and that he appeared to be under the influence of something. But most importantly, she said, he looked to be in overall really bad shape. Willie and later Eddie Lee would join them and ask her for different reference materials on Native American heritage. Eddie Lee was convinced that he was of Native American descent, and therefore could be protected from the law, and of course, reap the benefits of being a member of a particular nation. When he and Willie were speaking about Joel wanting to return to Ohio, Gail heard him say, "The only way he is going back to Ohio would be in a body locker, like Vietnam, when they send the dead home on the plane in a locked chest." They made their way to a new state park named Little Manatee. The next events are recounted using Willie's own testimony. Joel continued to express his interest in returning to Ohio. Eddie pulled Willie aside and said, "I have a job for you," and said that he wanted Willie to put Joel to sleep. He then heard Eddie Lee tell Estella May that today is a day that Willie is going to kill Joel. Estella May and some of the younger children left the campsite for a picnic. Sherry and Pixie remained with their children in the camper. Willie would invite Joel out for a walk in the woods. And around that same time, Eddie Lee returned and joined Willie and Joel on their walk. According to Willie, his father told him to take the garrote out of his pocket and place it around Joel's neck. After doing so, his dad said, "Turn it fast and hard." Willie would tell Joel that he was just trying to put him to sleep. And as he twisted the rope, Joel yelled out, "Eddie!" After Willie saw blood coming out of Joel's ears, he asked his father what had happened. And his father coolly stated, "You just killed Joel." Eddie subsequently kicked the body, and upon seeing Joel's leg move, told Willie, "Finish him off." Pixie would state that Willie did this all on his own, and that Sherry and her heard Joel yell out, "Ed!" and ran out to see what was occurring. When they found Willie with the garrote around Joel's neck, they ran back and told Eddie Lee what was going on. After leading him into the woods to find Joel and Willie, Pixie observed Willie holding Joel in his lap. Pixie testified that when her father returned from the woods, he instructed her to get rid of Joel's belongings and told her that if she ever talked about Joel's murder, that she would be next. She also testified that he ordered her and her brother Charles to go and purchase a shovel. Willie stated that before placing Joel's body in the grave, Eddie ordered him to chop Joel's hand off with a machete so that there would be no fingerprint evidence to identify the body. Willie, however, was unable to complete this task. The state's medical examiner, Dr. Marie Herman, confirmed portions of Willie's testimony. According to Dr. Herman, who assisted in the recovery of Joel's body and performed the autopsy, observed a deep wound on the victim's right hand that was caused by a sharp instrument with a great amount of force. The wound was consistent with an attempted dismemberment of the right hand. She also observed that upon recovery of Joel's body, there was a ligature device around his neck. She opined that the cause of death was asphyxiation as a result of ligature strangulation. Later that evening, Pixie overheard her father discussing the killing with her mother, at which time he stated that he had Willie murder Joel. According to all of the Sexton children who testified, they were instructed by their father to tell anyone, if asked, that Joel had taken the baby and returned to Ohio. Matthew Sexton also testified that his father told him not to say anything about Joel's death because he and Willie could get the electric chair. Eddie Lee would periodically contact Stark County authorities to negotiate his surrender. At one point, he stated that they would surrender on December 21st, 1993, at 11 o'clock p.m. This day would come and go. You see, he enjoyed toying with the authorities. That was just another way for him to exert his control over people. But calls of this nature would be what would eventually lead to the arrest of Eddie Lee and Estella Mae Sexton. The FBI managed to trace his calls to a phone booth outside of a campsite in the Little Manatee State Park. On January 14, 1994, Eddie and Estella were sitting in their Nissan in the parking lot of a Winn-Dixie, arguing. They came to the Winn-Dixie for milk and juice. He demanded that Estella Mae stay in the car while he sent Pixie inside. And the moment he turned off the ignition, the car doors flew open. The FBI pulled them out and placed them under arrest. Some of the children would be remanded into state custody. Others would return to Canton to live with their brother, Eddie Lee Jr. One night, while overwhelmed with the information that he had, Skipper confessed to his brother that two family members had been murdered while they were all in Florida. His brother promptly called his Uncle Otis and shared what Skipper told him. Otis contacted authorities and stated that Skipper had information on the whereabouts of Joel and Skipper Good. He would return to Florida and lead authorities to their bodies. Pixie and Willie were both arrested for their participation in the murders of both Joel and Skipper Good. Officially, their charges are as follows. Estella Mae Sexton, as part of the negotiated plea, pleaded no contest to 13 counts, 2 counts of rape, 3 counts of complicity to rape, 1 count of complicity to felonious sexual penetration, 2 counts of gross sexual imposition, 2 counts of complicity to gross sexual imposition, and 3 counts of child endangering. She was convicted and sentenced to an aggregate term of imprisonment of 13 to 25 years. She is up for parole in December of 2017. Willie Sexton, was convicted of second-degree murder for the murder of Joel Good. He was sentenced to 25 years. Estella Pixie Good was sentenced to 6 years in prison, but paroled after serving only 2 years and 3 months. Eddie Lee Sexton was sentenced to death on November 2, 1994. He would immediately appeal the sentence. Eddie Lee filed his first direct appeal in the Florida Supreme Court on July 20, 1995. The issues addressed included that the court mishandled aggravating factors and that capital punishment was not proportionate to the crime committed, nor was it constitutional. He further argued that the trial court erred in allowing testimony that he allegedly physically and sexually abused his children, practiced Satanism, threatened his children if they discussed family issues outside of the family, and trained his children to kill government agents, specifically FBI agents. The Florida Supreme Court determined that allowing the testimony of the children to these acts outside of the murder of Joel Good might have inflamed the jury. Therefore, the Florida Supreme Court reversed the sentence and conviction and remanded for a new trial on July 17, 1997. On remand from the Florida Supreme Court for a new trial, he was found guilty of first-degree murder on September 3, 1998. Upon jury advisory sentencing, the jury, by an 8-4 majority, voted for the death penalty. Sexton was sentenced to death on November 18, 1998. Eddie Lee Sexton died at the age of 68 due to natural causes related to a pre-existing heart condition. He had escaped the justice that was due to him, justice that Joel Good's family wanted. They wanted to watch Eddie Lee Sexton fear for his life as he walked towards the gurney, much like Joel must have feared for his as Willie strangled him. Eddie Lee Sexton, it would seem, much like in his home life, had the final say. Thank you for listening to part 2 of The Most Dysfunctional Family in America. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate, review, and of course, subscribe on iTunes. It would really help us out. You can find us on most social media platforms, Twitter, @TCFCPod, Facebook, facebook.com/TCFCPodcast, and of course, our website is truecrimefanclub.com. If you have an episode request or a general suggestion, you can send us an email, tcfcpod@gmail.com. Until next time.